Hello, everyone. I'm Becca, dietitian by trade, mom 24/7, wife from the start, and when there's a few extra hours in the day, you might find me hitting the trails or on horseback.
And I'm Kara, a therapist to women, a mom to a boy, an entrepreneur, mountain junkie, and a postpartum runner.
And this is Fit for a Queen, a podcast that's devoted to the female athlete wanting to balance the teeter-totter of all the things we desire out of life as women. Performance, health, intellect, and taking time for self, even if we only get 1 minute out of the day.
We're so excited to be bringing you the queens in the athletic world who have done just that. Okay, ladies, take a seat at your thrones, grab your crowns, and welcome to Fit for a Queen. Welcome back, queens. Today we've got Dr. Strano, who graduated from the University of Colorado at Boulder with a BA in psychology. After gaining experience at Children's Hospital Colorado working with eating disorders, as well as emotional and behavioral disorders, she attended the University of Denver and earned her master's in sport and performance psychology, combining her own experiences as a competitive athlete and a strong desire to help those struggling with their own mental health, specifically eating disorders. She pursued her PsyD at the University of Denver. She completed her pre-doctoral internship at the University of Oklahoma, training within the Psychological Resources for Student Athletes Office and the University Counseling Center.
As a primary therapist at ED Care, Dr. Strano places great importance on relationship building, an individual's previous experiences and strengths, and self-awareness. She aims to empower patients to become self-determined in taking action that aligns with their values. We've had that theme before. Mm-hmm. Dr. Strano believes the therapeutic relationship provides an ideal setting to show compassion, practice effective communication, acceptance, accountability, and values-guided action necessary to work towards a meaningful and fulfilling life separate from an individual's eating disorder. As a Colorado native, Dr. Strano enjoys spending time with her family and friends, cheering on the Broncos. We won't hold that against you. Traveling and being active outdoors.
Welcome, Dr. Strano. A warm welcome to Chiefs country.
Thank you. Excited to talk with you guys today. I'm really excited.
We're happy to have you on. This transition out of sport is a hot topic, something we're both passionate about. Mm-hmm. And we're having some professional and elite athletes on that have decided to take breaks or transition out of sport. And it's been a theme of difficulty for some. So I recently came across this quote. It is often said that a sports star will die twice, the first time at retirement. And I read this. I'm like, wow. That's kind of extreme, but Dr. Strano, do you think transitioning out of sport really is a difficult issue for athletes in general? I would think there would be a lot of relief that would come from this, the need to not compete constantly at this level and take a break. Can you speak a little bit more on transitioning out and mental health issues that may arise?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's definitely some athletes, yes, who do feel ready to move on. They have some sense of closure. Maybe they're expecting this and they're expecting this end to approach at some point. But unfortunately, I think very parallel with that quote that you read, unfortunately, this time period can absolutely feel like a part of them or at times their entire self is dying. And I think often student athletes or even professional athletes, as you mentioned earlier, aren't prepared for this type of change that can feel quite abrupt, I think unplanned, definitely just a foreign concept, and athletes feel really unable to cope, almost paralyzed in these moments. I think also, so many athletes have been in a familiar routine or structure that's really centered around sports since they were really young. They quite literally eat, sleep, and breathe sport, and their identity becomes so fused around the sport experience itself, and everything that's encompassed in that, so expectations and pressures from others, relationships, schedules, all of that, and this guide and what's given them direction for so long is gone, and they feel completely lost. So I do feel like a really significant part of their identity and of themselves for a lot of athletes does feel like it's gone. Mm-hmm. And I think, as I mentioned at the very beginning, I think, and there's been some research, I know Yannick talks in one of his articles so much about the excitement for professional and familial and social domains and, a lot of experiences to come. But not everyone moves on that quickly, and I just don't think a lot of people talk about what can actually happen during that time and how worrisome that is. I know, Kara, you mentioned what types of mental health issues that can arise, and I think those who really struggle lacking those healthier adaptive ways to cope are the ones that we really see fall into some patterns that can be pretty concerning and at times, you know, warranting of higher level of care or more support and structure. I think we see just the adjustment period, mood states shifting. We see sense of hopelessness, just loss, that real grief with that transition out. Again, it was just such a big part of their life and their self-image. And now this lack of control, this lack of structure, really just this inability to find satisfaction with one's mind, but also their body outside the regimen of, you know, participating in sport can lead to some more serious issues, eating disorders and depression, all of that.
Yeah, I think I talked about it in one of our first podcasts as being running and competitive at such a young age and deciding to leave my sport after my sophomore year of college. I remember thinking, like, I have no idea from, you know, running since the sixth and seventh grade to 23, 24, I have no idea what my body will look like when I'm not competing. And that fear around really not knowing your body and what that not being competitive might, how it'll turn out, I guess.
Right. Well, and like you said, from an early age, we get started. Well, that includes your friends tend to be centered around the sport, your role models, your coaches. And so that means a lot of times breaking apart from that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, like you said, there's the physical changes, but there's also just the way that you connect with people and how other people perceive you. You might be, or many of these athletes are known as the runner or the swimmer. And when that's no longer the case, or it's not to such an extent that it has been at such a high level for a while, and especially when it's abrupt and just a foreign concept, it can be a really scary and a really challenging transition.
Yeah, unfortunately, kind of goes into my next question, that media, professional athletes that we've seen that have retired from sport, they tend to be under a microscope, right? But we see some athletes that do well when they retire and some that not so well. What are some risk factors for those that might struggle a bit more? Or how can others be more successful?
Yeah. Well, and yeah, you make a good point that, you know, there is some research that still some protection from body image concerns can be a result of just being involved in sport or being involved in athletics. So there are layers of protection, I think, in there. But for so many athletes, they're already in such a unique sport environment that creates opportunity for body image thoughts to come up and body dissatisfaction and a real harsh critique about how they are physically. I think, as you know, Ron Thompson and Roberta Sherman have pointed out so extensively in presentations and articles and their book and everything, but just specifically the focus on image, especially when we think about the more aesthetic, clean endurance, weight class sports, the pressure to perform at a certain weight or physique is something that that's all they've known. I think often athletes really engage in a lot of comparison and competition with teammates, siblings, peers, whoever it might be that's really in that environment. And they're often trying to handle and field feedback and judgment and critique within their performance from other people too. So they definitely are at more risk. There's a lot higher possibility that they're going to need more support to kind of transition from this environment and what they've been used to. And I think what it's concerning because it's such a norm for them. There's so many parts of their sport that outside of sport we might see as even more concerning or more disordered. But the over-exercising and restricting at certain points in the season, maintaining a certain physique or a certain weight or a certain appearance to perform at a certain level just feels like the norm because that's what they've seen. That's what's been going on around them. And so when that's been reinforced, trying to help them actually recognize, you know, a healthy way to nourish your body and a healthy way to view your body and to practice some self-acceptance for yourself that doesn't just purely, rely on body weight, shape, and size. That's a long struggle for some and really lead to more maladaptive behaviors and patterns, and unfortunately some pretty serious medical complications and consequences if that long-term, you know, engagement with behaviors continues.
Mm-hmm. So Mel, if somebody is struggling, how would you suggest they find some resources or help?
Yeah. Oh, such a loaded question. I mean, you know, oftentimes I feel like putting the onus on the individual to do something is so hard because they really aren't aware of what's actually happening. This is just something that they're kind of learning and experiencing as they're going. So I think, you know, of course, asking, you know, if they're aware and if they're, you know, if they have some insight about the concern of what they're doing, I would absolutely recommend that they reach out for help, whether that's with family or, you know, I know often sometimes just connection with the university that they were at before, any trainers or strength and conditioning coaches or therapists that they were working with, you know, to get some referrals and some resources is helpful. But I so much think that in order to support these athletes that are struggling when they're transitioning out, it's kind of on us as clinicians in the field and really advocates for helping them maintain, or not even maintain, but find a healthy body image and help to relearn how to fuel their body in the right way. So I think it's really on us to educate the people who are working with these athletes prior to the transition and making sure that all the resources and you know, support resources are available for them before that transition happens. Because I think we're just delaying the inevitable because we have concrete evidence. I think you guys have spoken to a couple people who have experienced it themselves as well, that we know this is happening. And so not turning a blind eye, but trying to address it before it actually starts to play out. Mm-hmm. I think also something can be helpful. Sorry, I just interrupted you.
No, go, Mel.
No, one last thing I was just going to say, I think in regards to what a person who's struggling could do too is any connection with somebody who really gets it because they've gone through it or are just going through it also can be helpful. So connecting them with those, you know, maybe other athletes who have gone through that type of transition or have had similar experiences can also be really helpful and just allowing them not to feel so alone and feeling like they're the only ones who, you know, are really struggling in this domain or going through this new experience.
Yeah, that's great. Like a mentorship.
So yeah, absolutely.
Do you think the sport world does a good job with these athletes that are transitioning?
You know, from what I think from, and you can absolutely.
Sorry, we kind of put you on the spot with that one.
No, I think you can relate to this too. Just in doing like a lit review and a lit search on what studies and what research and, you know, what is the evidence out there about this transition? It is so limited. I think Varnes in one of the articles said, you know, just, I can't remember his wording exactly, but he used the term, it's a bit startling, just how little information and actual just information that we have out there about this transition and the impact on one's body image throughout the transition. So I feel like there could always be more. I think there's tons of information and tons of literature on transition itself. So unexpected injury, resulting in retirement. I think professional sport retirement even has more. I think we have tons of information on eating disorder prevalency within the college setting and out, but there's kind of this black hole that occurs for the student athletes and that quick spiral into disordered eating patterns or eating disorder behaviors that takes place in that time period. And I think there's just such a strong need to continue exploring this area. And even before that, just, I mean, as you guys are doing so well, just getting the word out that this is important and really, you know, helping people become more vigilant of signs and symptoms leading to some more potentially concerning issues that we've talked a little bit about before, just in what that looks like in regards to transitioning out of sport and then trying to develop a healthy body image and kind of a different, unfamiliar relationship with oneself and identity.
Anything you think we could do as clinicians, parents, coaches to help make this transition smoother?
You know, I think kind of like what I just said, I think anything we can do beforehand, I think just bringing, you know, psychoeducation on healthy body image and the nutritional components of feeding one's body appropriately before that transition, helping, you know, that start freshman, sophomore, junior year of college. I think, you know, in the same way that I think universities do a really nice job of helping athletes prepare for what's it going to be like when you don't have sport and you have to be in a business world or a professional setting, or maybe you're going to grad school or whatever that might look like. I think there could definitely be a parallel process with how do you actually deal with your physical body changing, and how do you deal with the shift in identity? How do you deal with some of the mood shifts we've talked about, or maybe some of the more mental health concerning mental health issues that are starting to arise? Just kind of putting it out there as a reality so that it doesn't come as such a shock to them. And I think that it's not just on universities or counseling centers. I think it's on parents, I think friends, outpatient teams, anybody who's really in contact and has some rapport and trust with that person, to where they feel like they could really make an impact and help, you know, hopefully prevent something from spiraling out of control or getting worse than it would be without any support at all.
Mm-hmm.
So,
thank you.
Yeah.
At the end of each interview, we like to ask our guests how they live the FIT philosophy. So, Mel, how do you continue to focus on performance, your health, improve intellect, and taking time for self? How do you find the balance out there in beautiful Denver, Colorado?
That's a great question. Man, and honestly, something I'm still practicing, I think, through trial and error every single day. I guess I'm a firm believer in practicing what I preach. So I think a lot of this really aligns with the way I encourage or try to help someone shift or change or try something new, you know, in the environment I'm in every day. I think listening to my body and mind without judgment, trying to accept that critique, but also try to minimize that critique. Definitely acknowledging the importance of balancing quality and quantity. So really for me, recognizing warning signs of taking too much on. Reading, definitely really intentionally spend time for this. Using my colleagues, mentors, friends, just for knowledge, guidance, insights, really keeping that community strong. Well, self-care is huge. So traveling, spending time with my family, hiking. I think all of this kind of helped definitely in the past when performing in a, you know, more athletic academic setting, but definitely now just in various roles, whether it's therapist or partner, family member, friend, colleague. I like that question though. That's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Hence why we have the podcast called Fit for a Queen.
Uh-huh.
It's important. Very important.
We're always about, walking the walk and talking the talk. So this is why we put our guests on the spot, too, of how they're living it out. And it gives individuals some ideas of how they can do it, too. So we appreciate all of your information, Dr. Steno. Anything else you'd like to add that our viewers should know about kind of transitioning or what that looks like?
No, I mean, I think kind of along that same line with kind of walking the walk, I think there's a huge component to just normalizing this experience for people. I think using our own experiences, I think, there are definitely elements of my own transition out of sports that I could absolutely relate to what I think we see a lot of people going through now and happening to now. And I think any sort of really genuine, authentic connection on that level is so helpful. So just normalizing that this is part of that transition, and these things are often going to come up. And what do we do in response? How do we react to it?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably definitely key in this process.
I agree. We've been kind of putting other people's stories on social media. I think you're right of talking about it more, sharing other stories. Again, making it a normalized conversation so others can reach out for help and the discussion can continue. So, Dr. Strano, thanks so much for being on Fit for a Queen. We so appreciate it. And have a great day out there.
So much. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye, Queens.
Thank you to our sponsor, ED Care. ED Care is one of the nation's foremost center for the diagnosis and treatment of eating disorders. They have provided PHP, IOP, and outpatient care for all genders 18 and older since 2001. CAMHSA, which stands for Connection, Acceptance, Mindfulness, Sense of Self, and Action, is ED Care's mindfulness-based treatment approach that is incorporated into each individualized treatment plan. Facilities are located in Colorado and Kansas. All treatment is supported by master's level clinicians or higher. ED Care Denver offers specialty tracks for binge eating disorder, and substance abuse, well as the elite athlete track under the guidance of Dr. Melissa Strano, sports psychologist. Affordable housing options are available in Denver and Kansas City. Visit them online at www.eatingdisorder.care to learn more or call 866-771-0861. For additional information on today's topic and guests, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FitForAQueen. And
hashtag Fit for a Queen.
And don't forget to rate us on iTunes. We can't wait for you to join us next time on Fit for a Queen.
Bye, Queens.